it is Ryan Seacrest here, and if you're looking for some serious fun, head over to ChumbaCasino.com. At Chumba Casino, you can play all your favorite social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. It's the most fun you can have on your phone or computer.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexroad from The Athletic, taking you through this Friday morning here in Nashville, Tennessee. It's that time of the week. We bring in our good friend Teron Davenport, ESPN NFL Nation Titans reporter and host of Talking with TD. Teron, what's going on, brother?
Hey, what's going on, fellas?
Not a whole lot. Hope you're doing well and staying safe. Teron, a big topic of conversation we've had today on the show is the decision the Titans made to franchise tag Derrick Henry. We know the Todd Gurley news that has come out over the last 24 hours or so, released by the Rams, now has since signed with the Atlanta Falcons. It got us, you know, in the discussion of running backs and the value they have in today's NFL. What was your initial reaction when the Titans put the franchise tag on Derrick Henry, and what do you think it could mean for their long-term relationship?
Well, when I found out the tag was placed, it was kind of expected. I really think that they're going to try to get him signed to a deal before the deadline, the July 15th deadline. But you know, that's just my thoughts. I know the Todd Gurley situation, but it's different. Gurley had a knee condition before he signed the deal. So I'm not going to say that's some type of warning not to sign running backs, because, you know, just the same with Nick Foles getting traded or, you know, some of the other things that have happened, Joe Flacco getting released, no one's saying, hey, that's a reason why you shouldn't sign quarterbacks to a long-term deal. So it's a part of the game.
I'm glad you said that, Teron. I can see myself starting to, like, melt down a little bit over this, because, like, I understand the risk with the running back position, and I understand the shelf life on the position. It's been the shortest for a long time, and we've had a bad run of these guys signing deals, and then for whatever reason, a lot of times it's injury, you know, not fulfilling, you know, those contracts. But like, Derrick Henry is not those guys. Every situation's different, right? And I would flip it around on Todd Gurley. We were talking about this earlier. Why were the Rams in the Super Bowl? Why were the Rams a legit contender? I mean, if you watched them play, it was because they had a great player in the backfield making Jared Goff look like a better player than he is, right?
Yeah, no, 100%, and that's the thing. And I think it was Bucky Brooks, he made an excellent point. It's just so ironic that people are so hesitant to pay these running backs that are making the quarterbacks that are getting these big deals in some cases look even better. You know, I think for what the Titans have, I think Tannehill and Henry, they work off each other. They're just an excellent they complement each other really well. So I'm not going to say Tannehill is a guy that, you know, can only be successful with Henry, but I will say the most success that he had was with Henry running the ball. And the most success that Henry had was with Tannehill as the quarterback. So that, for me, is why I think it is necessary to pay both guys, because, like you said, it's situational. And in my opinion, I don't break it down to paying a certain position. I break it down to paying playmakers.
Teron, how surprised were you that the Titans traded Jarrell Casey, and what do you think they should do with the money they freed up from getting out from underneath that contract?
I was shocked that they traded him, honestly. I had looked at some of the guys that could have cap relief, you know, if they were cut, and obviously $10 million is a lot. It looks like the Broncos took all $13 million of it. I was shocked. But with that money saved, I thought for sure that they were going to turn around and sign Jadeveon Clowney. That's still to be seen. I understand no one wanting to go upwards of $20 million for him, but I really thought that's where they were going once they made the deal.
So where would you go for Clowney? What is Jadeveon Clowney worth right now in your mind if you're playing GM?
I think 16 is probably where I would go. 16, 17, that's probably the neighborhood I would go in. I mean, you look, Dante Fowler signed a three-year, what, $48 million deal. So that's $16 million a year. I think that's reasonable for Clowney. The thing is with him, I mean, he's not going to get you a lot of sacks, but that dude does impact games. And I think that holds value. But, you know, end of the day, teams, they pay for guys to sack quarterbacks. And Clowney only had three. And then the year before, you know, he had nine. And before that, 9.5. So, you know, there's still something to be left for Clowney before you go into paying him over $20 million.
Teron Davenport, ESPN NFL Nation Titans reporter, on the line with us. And, Teron, it just seems like the Vic Beasley signing kind of came out of left field. I'm not sure many Titans fans were expecting that. What did you make of that signing, and what should reasonable expectations for Vic Beasley be this upcoming year?
Yeah, it definitely came out of left field for me. I was very surprised. And some of the people that I talked to, he didn't seem like a match. But I get it, what they did. He's a guy that has talent. You know, his get-off is really good. I remember when Harold Landry was coming out, the comp that I actually gave Landry was Vic Beasley. So, yeah, similar players. I didn't think it would happen because I thought they wanted – to get a guy that was heavier, and when I say heavier, I'm not talking about, like, actual weight-wise. I'm talking about the way he played. And that's where Marcus Golden seemed to make sense, because I felt like he was better against the run, and he's a guy that could set that edge. But I get what they're doing because, you know, again, he has talent, so he's someone that, you know, he has the top 10 pick sticker on him. So coaches are always going to want to work with that. There's talent, so they want to see what they could do to – bring that talent to the surface a little more. And I think that's what you have going on. It's a one-year deal, so they're hoping they can motivate him. They're hoping that they could get him to, you know, work off of the four sacks in the final four games that he had.
Do you think, Teron, that guys, like front seven defensive guys in particular, like as time goes on, we'll see more chances taken there just because that's kind of Vrabel's wheelhouse? I was thinking about that the other day, like, you know, if there's a type of player or a position that he feels good about, you know, bringing along and working with and getting the most out of, it's got to be guys like that, right?
Yeah, for sure, because that's his comfort level. I think that's definitely the case. You know, it's no different than if you have some guys at the station that are better at talking at hockey about hockey, some that are better talking about football. You're going to go to your comfort zone and excel and what you're comfortable working with. And obviously, as a guy who played in that front seven, he's going to be more comfortable trying to develop and inspire guys that play there.
Teron, now that we know the Titans have lost Jack Conklin, how realistic do you think it is with the money they have available to them that Logan Ryan ends up back here in Nashville next year?
Yeah, I think it's a possibility, and I think that's going to depend on what else they do as far as the edge rusher is concerned. But, yeah, I think it's a possibility. They definitely understand what he brings to the table. I mean, this is the guy that broke the DBs down before every game. You know, gave him words of wisdom and encouragement. He's clearly a leader. He is the leader, or was the leader, of that secondary. So I think it's realistic that he will be back, because they lost a lot of leadership throughout the locker room. So, you know, that does have a tangible value.
Speaking of Conklin, Teron, obviously Dennis Kelly signs right after, you know, news breaks of Conklin signing with Cleveland. You comfortable with Dennis Kelly as the starting right tackle for this team? And how does that look different with him there instead of Conklin?
Yeah, I think that's something that they should be comfortable with, especially at half the price. Obviously, there's a difference as far as the run blocking is concerned, but I don't think there's really a drop-off on pass pro. So, in my opinion, I think it's a good deal for the Titans. I get why they let Conklin move on. And the thing is, when you have Dennis Kelly, there's still a degree of continuity also, because this guy is someone who has been in the trenches with everyone else that is starting on the offensive line. So I think it is definitely a good match for them. It's something that I suggested that they would do if Conklin left. I still wouldn't rule out them drafting a guy at 29. I know they have interest in multiple offensive linemen, but I think it's a good move.
ESPN NFL Nation Titans reporter Teron Davenport has been our guest here on Morning Drive. TD, thanks so much for joining us, man. We appreciate it as always.
No problem. You guys take it easy.
You too, man. Really going to be interesting to see if that's the route the Titans go at the right tackle position. Are they comfortable sticking with Dennis Kelly as the starter? If so, what do you do as the backup? Like, who do you bring in? I mean, it's going to be kind of an interesting process to see what they go about doing there. We had Floyd Reese on earlier in the week, and he was like, you know, I don't know necessarily if I'd be comfortable with Dennis Kelly as the starter. Now, he's one of the best backup tackles in the league, but to Teron's point, I'm not sure there's a gigantic drop-off in terms of the pass protection. I certainly think Jack Conklin is a much better run blocker than Dennis Kelly is.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's half the price, but it's still a price that, to me, you're paying to someone who's starting for you.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a hefty contract for your backup, for your swing tackle. So I think that number kind of tells you right there what the Titans think. I think the Titans, reading tea leaves, I think the Titans were surprised that Conklin went to Cleveland. I think it would be a mischaracterization to think this was the Titans just, yeah, go ahead, do whatever you want. I think, you know, that he was a priority to try to bring back, but of course at a certain limit, at a certain number. And the market for him did turn out to be less than there were some people throwing stuff around. Charles Robinson talked about that yesterday. You go to the combine, you get fake numbers thrown around on guys.
Yeah.
And so, like, the Jets, 18 mil for Conklin thrown out there wasn't accurate. But regardless, you know, he's in Cleveland. They've got Dennis Kelly. And I think they're going to give him a real chance here to just be the guy and keep that job.
When we come back, what do we believe the asking price for Jadeveon Clowney should be? And what's the absolute maximum, if you're the Titans, you'd be comfortable going to get Jadeveon Clowney? We'll talk about that next. This is Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. That was Teron Davenport, ESPN NFL Nation Titans reporter, joining us in the last segment, talking about Jadeveon Clowney and the number in which he'd be comfortable going. Right around that $16 million, $17 million range is what TD had to say there. Welcome back into Morning Drive. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rexroad here on this Friday morning on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Joe, we've heard reports of Clowney asking for maybe even in excess of $20 million per season for his next contract. I personally don't believe he's worth anything near that. I think, you know, he's a really good player, as Teron said there. There's a lot of value he brings to the table in his ability to affect the quarterback, his ability to be maybe the best defensive lineman in the game in terms of stopping the run. But he's one of those guys that you look at the sack totals and they just don't blow you away. And Teron, to his point, these teams are paying for those sack totals. So it's hard to justify, I think, if you're the Titans or really anybody else, to get up towards that $20 million per season mark. I mean, I just think that's ludicrous to even think about asking for if you're Clowney.
Yeah, it's a really interesting case because you're right. I mean, sack totals, of course, that's a huge selling point for a player on the open market, and teams want that. Teams also want dominant physical, you know, presences on defense, and certainly there are guys who get paid. I mean, it's totally a different position, but, like, you know, Aaron Donald would not have to have a big sack total for people to say,
right, yep,
I'm paying that guy because he blows up the opposing, you know, line of scrimmage time after time after time, and then whoever makes the play, it's a lot largely because of what he's doing in there. And Jarrell Casey did that for a long time for the Titans, and it will, you know, moving on to Denver.
I mean, we'll see if Jeffrey Simmons can do that too.
And Dominican Sue was a guy who, you know, again, he didn't have, you know, interior D lineman. There's that. And Jeffrey Simmons could be a dominant player here for years and not have big numbers. Where Clowney plays, you expect numbers to go with that. It's just, but if you're him and you're sitting at the table, you're saying, well, I can do that and I can make it easier for everybody else, and I will set the edge every time, and I can still get pressure on the quarterback. And, yeah, I didn't have a big sack number last year, but, you know, I'm a game changer. I'm a game wrecker still. That's his case. I just don't think you can make that case at $22-23 million. That's just I just think that's a non-starter.
What's the number you're willing to go to if you're John Robinson and the Titans to bring in Clowney?
Well, it's also the term of the deal too, you know, but if you're just talking how much you're willing to pay per year for Clowney, I think Teron's probably right around there. I mean, I might even go up to 17 and 18's too much, right?
Let's feel a little uncomfortable there.
This is like a blackjack table, you know, you stick at 17. So I'll go there. But, I mean, that seems big. But I do think that if you just thought about Clowney on this team, and certainly as a guy who has played for Mike Vrabel, knows him well, so it's not like you're going to get any sort of sticker shock in terms of, we watched the film, you know, we saw him, you know, here or there, but this is not who we thought it is. I mean, Vrabel knows who he is and I think would be good at using him. I mean, I think it would certainly make a difference on this defense. How much of a difference? I don't know. $17 million worth of difference? I don't know. But you dump $13 million of salary for a guy who – you were better with him, and you're not. Yeah. You're weaker now without him. So I think you've got to do something.
Well, let's say they can't come to a deal with Clowney. They freed up all this space. Then what do you do if you're John Robinson and the Titans? Because you still probably need to address the pass rush in some form. Like, I don't think you're going to feel very comfortable with Vic Beasley being like your offensive or your offseason big-time solution from the pass rushing standpoint. So you've still probably got to address that aspect of the game, whether that's in free agency or the draft, but all of a sudden you've got all this money freed up. Like, what do you do with it? Like, at that point, I think you've got to pretty heavily do everything you can to bring Logan Ryan back into the fold if he's still out there.
Yeah. I mean, certainly there's value in him, but I still think, yeah, you've got to figure something out still up front. You know, somewhere. I mean, who's out there? You know, you've got, I mean, it's a lot of, obviously, kind of, you got like Everson Griffin. Is he interesting? You know, I mean, you can go through some guys who, Derek Wolfe.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, hey.
Anybody really fire you up in there?
Sue's out there.
Yeah, hey, buddy.
The Titans were interested in Sue, you know, a couple years ago, for sure. And, you know, he ended up going to the Rams, which, of course, at the time, you're like, wow, Sue and Donald together. And again, I mean, that team was good. It was really good, and that was part of it, too. There's just no one. I mean, this is one of those things where, I mean, you sort of, you know, you have to leave it to John Robinson, those guys who were sitting there grinding film, and really, what else do you have to do right now? Damon Harrison, you know, is he interesting? There's probably some of these names that I'm throwing out there, at least one of them has some kind of interest. But obviously no one's moving the needle. But it's not, you know, it's about finding football fits. And if you can bring back Logan Ryan and get one more of those second-tier guys that you feel good about, then you can still end up okay. Pernell McPhee, I mean, I'm going through the list of guys who right now are not signed. Jabal Sheard, Vinny Curry. It's a lot of guys that are like, who knows? You know,
what's Javon Kurz doing nowadays?
Some will fit. There you go. Bring back the freak. I mean, that you think about that Super Bowl team. You know, the Titans were a so-so team for a few years, and you know, before and the Oilers during that stretch, and then the Titans. They get that guy, and all of a sudden, when you have a guy who can come off the edge and make that kind of a difference, what does that do for your team?
He was unbelievable that year. He really was.
Adrian Claiborne. Anybody interested in Adrian Claiborne? I mean, he's out there. Hey, Ziggy Ansah is out there. You know, that was a guy who, when healthy, was a good player.
Yeah.
I mean, if it's Logan Ryan, then I assume it's probably one of those guys with Logan Ryan, or it's probably if you're spending on Clowney, then that may be goodbye to Logan Ryan.
Bob tweets in and says, there's a massive Seahawks fan I watch plenty of games with where Clowney was there. He's an absolute wreck and a disruptor. I would pay the man.
Okay.
I mean, certainly, he is.
Well, and that's the thing.
That's the argument beyond the sack totals.
Yeah, that's his. I mean, look, obviously, a three-sack guy, normally you're like, okay, no.
Right.
Yeah, he is. And this is where we think of just the interior defensive linemen as the guys who don't have to have stats, but you can be a game wrecker and not have stats. Preferably, if you're going to be pushing into that salary range, you're both. Again, Mike Vrabel, if you're Mike Vrabel, and we just talked about how Vic Beasley is an example of a project of a really talented guy that a guy like Mike Vrabel probably thinks, I can get this guy to turn it on and find his potential. In the same way, if you're Mike Vrabel, the 1 year you were defensive coordinator for Clowney, he had his career high in sacks. He had 9.5 sacks. So you probably feel good about what you could do with him here.
Yeah, I mean, certainly going to be interesting. And he did have his highest sack total year under Mike Vrabel. 9.5 sacks, I think, in 2017
right. Was
when that was. So certainly if you're Clowney, I think there's a comfort level there too as well with Vrabel. So we'll be interested to see where Clowney ends up. Maybe it happens over the weekend. Maybe he ends up back in Seattle. Who knows what's going to happen with Jadeveon Clowney. Certainly, if I'm the Titans, though, I want that number to be closer to $15 million than $20 million at that point. When we come back, Preds TV analyst Terry Crisp will join us. We'll find out what Crispy's been up to and ask him, what does he think about the NHL season? Should it come back? Should they go straight into the playoffs? We'll get into all of these things with Crispy. That's next. This is Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Our next guest simply is the best. Terry Crisp, Preds TV analyst, brought to you by Highland Group, joins us each and every Friday at 8:30. Crispy, what's going on, my man?
Well, gentlemen, I have to be very honest with you. Nice to talk to you, talk to somebody different for a change. And I just want you to know that I didn't realize how many closets, how many drawers, and how many sweaters and blouses and shirts there were in our house.
Now you have just a full picture of everything going on around you.
Now I got about 12 garbage bags out of my garage ready to go to Habitat or whatever, where we drop them off at.
Nice.
Crispy, how are you getting by with no hockey to watch right now?
You know what? It's tough for everything, not just the hockey end of it, but it's the social end of it that you miss at the Bridgestone, our team down there, the guys I worked with, Pete, Lindsay, and all of them, and the neighbors. You can't do it like you're afraid to, what's a 6-foot rule now or whatever it is. And
yeah.
I thought that 6-foot rule was just in hockey, where you couldn't go near a guy in the ice. Within 6 foot. Oh, sorry. I digress. Sorry.
And that, ladies and gentlemen, is why he's the best.
All right, so I'm looking at Twitter yesterday, Crispy, and I see a fantastic picture of you and Pete Weber with Slapshot on the TV. So give me the backstory here.
Well, Pete and I, when we first got together, he said, there's one thing we have to get straight. He said, there's certain movies I like and you don't know, and you'll have to know them. The number one was Slapshot. Then it was Blazing Saddles. And then the one behind that, I think, was Animal House.
Yes.
Now, you know, not being a movie buff, I didn't know. So, of course, we sit down, Pete and I. I think now, no, I know Pete Weber knows every word in Slapshot. I'm probably 3/4 of the phrases I can use out there. And we're allowed visitors, you know, periodically you're allowed. And Pete and Claudia popped in the other day. They sort of drove around wide of everybody. And being of the same breed and the same age category and whatnot, they came in, and Pete and I were sitting there, and we're flipping around, and on comes Slapshot. So Miss Claudia says, you know what, guys, this is just old-time hockey with two old-timers. Let's take a picture. So that's what we did.
Toe Blake.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You're not that old, son. You know, but remember Mr. Toe Blake, one of the best.
Crispy, how much do you think coaching in the NHL has changed since you were a coach and won the Stanley Cup with the Flames?
Not a whole lot. And coaching hasn't changed. The bottom line is to win. I don't care if you're a screamer coach, if you're a head guy coach, Quiet one behind the bench, a shouter behind the bench. They all go through the whole rigmarole of it. Back in our day, my day, the day before me, and right now, I think the biggest changing in coaching today is the advantage that coaches have with the new technology. And it boggles my mind how, like Law and the guys in the video room, what they can do. And you walk in off that bench into your dressing room, and within 30 seconds, they can give you a whole minute of breakouts of a certain player, or broken right down. Like not only hockey, football, baseball, et cetera, go on through it. Modern technology has advanced the game so far, but I always still maintain this, and I'm not going to ever let go of this one. When I walk off that bench, from behind that bench, at the end of a period, if I don't know what's wrong with my team or what's good about my team or what I have to correct in a hurry, then I shouldn't be coaching.
That's a good. That's really interesting. Yeah, I was gonna. As you brought up the technology too, Crispy. What was like? You know, when you were coaching. I mean, I'm sure you guys use video some. We're probably talking. What are we talking? Like the projector on the screen? Oh, yeah. We talking, you know.
Oh, now here we go. Sure. I knew we were going to get around that. Well, I know that I had to turn the handle on the one thing to make it go around and around and around. And then I think it was that little guy that, what was his name? The little guy who used to shuffle and twirl a cane. He'd pop in periodically. But I'll tell you a real quick true story. When I first became an assistant coach with the Philadelphia Flyers with Fred Shiro, and we're just bringing in a replay, the video, the reels. And I brought in two of our top players. Freddie says, bring them in and show them a couple, like a minute or 2 minutes of this, what I want to show them. I said, okay. I really felt proud. So in we go, and I bring the two guys in, turn the lights off, turn the projector on, and I'm watching it. And I bet you it's not 40 seconds. I hear snoring. The two guys are sound asleep. Sound asleep in the friggin' dark room with me. I said to Freddie, I don't think this is going to work, Freddie. This isn't exactly what you had in mind. And I'm not going to mention the two players, but they know who they were.
Wow.
Fred's TV analyst, Terry.
So we've advanced.
I would say so. Fred's TV analyst, Terry Crisp, on the line with us. Crispy, we were talking earlier in the show. Andy Kennedy is transitioned from the SEC Network back to being a coach. He coached a few years ago at Ole Miss. And we see it all the time now in the world of sports where coaches go from the world of, you know, one day you're coaching, you're behind the bench, and the next you're in a TV studio somewhere, or you're a color analyst on a game, and there's been varying degrees of success. Some guys are really good at it. Some guys are not. What was the transition like for you going from coaching and getting into broadcasting, and how quickly did you feel really comfortable doing it?
You know what? The first time I stepped behind a camera, I was never bothered me one inch. I don't know why. To me, it was just sort of a natural progression. I was a player. The best thing in the world to be in a there's no better feeling in the world than being an athlete. I don't care what sport it is, tennis, track, hockey, football. That's the greatest feeling in the world to be one of those. The next thing, if it's in your blood, the next greatest, close to the action, to still be in the action, you'd be a coach. Now you're a coach. You're still in the action. You're still in the dressing room. You're still on the trips. Then the next thing is, once you're done coaching, hey, broadcast, TV, you're still in the dressing room, you're still mingling with the players, you're still talking to coaches, you're still in the action. It's just sort of a natural progression. And to be honest with you, when I first went up to Canada to do the Worlds and the playoffs in TSN, and I remember there was two rookie kids up there just starting. Their name was Bob McKenzie and Gord Miller.
Wow.
And I walked into the studio, and the general manager introduced me to Mr. McKenzie and Mr. Miller, who were just pups then, and I was the old-timer, and just took off from there. So you know what? If it's there, it's there, I guess. Like you watch guys like I watch like Chris Mason or Hal Gale or these guys that just come out of the dressing room, just come quit playing, and go into any other sport you want to do it, and those guys, they're naturals. They just know what the feeling is. They know what sports is about. They know what a dressing room is. They know how to handle players, how to handle themselves. And there's no magic potion. There's no big magic pill you swallow and you become one. It's just, so I think it's in your blood.
I mean, I believe you've told me this story. What, you were coming here, what, for a one game to help Jerry Helper for one game, right?
And then Jerry Helper, my buddy from Yep. And I said, Jerry, he's no. I said, you owe me Yep. Came up to sit, sat down with Pete Weber, introduced myself. Pete said that. He says, Crispy, I interviewed you a long time ago when you were a coach. Ooh, PG, okay, yeah, all right. But from one game, Sheila and I, my wife, have been here 21 years, came to do one game, and have loved it and made Nashville our home. So, like I said, natural progression.
Crispy, last thing for you here. We've talked about potential solutions the NHL may face whenever they come back, whether it's a month from now, 2 months from now, whenever the case may be. At some point, the players are going to have to get back into the swing of things before they come back in terms of maybe a potential training camp, maybe week-long, week-and-a-half-long, who knows what the exact time frame will be. From your vantage point, how long do you think it will take guys and players to get ready and to get back into game shape before the season can commence and we can return to playing hockey?
You know what? I could sound like a genius and say 2 weeks, or I could say 2.5 weeks, or I could say a week. You know what? There's no set time frame for it. All athletes are different. All the guys train different. A lot of the guys that are in the off season will work hard and do it. A lot of the guys probably won't work as hard. So there's no map for that. The only thing I do know is that once it starts and once they open up, the guys better be ready. But I was thinking about this one, and you know, I don't know who's going to pull the trigger on when is the deadline. Like, there's got to be a shutdown button when you hit that button, it's over. Nobody has the Stanley Cup this year. We're done with it or whatever. That's what I'm wondering, who's going to pull that trigger and when they're going to pull it, because there's a lot of money involved in every sport. Every sport out there, everything is sidelined, and we all know it. It's a monumental decision, and I wouldn't want to be the guy to have to make it.
No doubt.
Yeah, certainly going to be an interesting decision. The further and further we go along in this journey, I think the more realistic that decision becomes. Crispy, thanks so much.
Guys, I want to really quick give you this one. Sheila and I have been talking here for a lot of time to talk together. How about when they come back? There's 31 teams. Okay, put 30 teams in the playoffs. Say the last place team, who's last place. Give them the first overall draft no matter what. Let them have it.
Yeah.
There's no job, but they're not in the playoffs, and they won't be in the ping pong. Now you got 30 teams. Start matching them up from whatever, however you want to match them. 30 goes with number one or whatever, two. Play a 2 out of 3 or a 3 out of 5 and whittle them down real quick, and then get into the 4 to 7 for the semifinals and the finals.
Hey, I'm for it. It's going to require some outside-of-the-box thinking by the NHL, no matter which way they go about it.
Poor Detroit Red Wings.
The Red Wings are out
again.
Oh, I was going to say, who's going to grab it? Who's going to get a hold of it?
Crispy, always with the digs to the Red Wings. I love it. Crispy, thanks so much for coming on with us today, man. We appreciate it.
Hey, anytime, Greg. I just want to give a shout-out to our city and everybody out there that's working together to make this thing go away. It's not a nice situation, but I'm proud of our city and out there. And let's all stay healthy, and let's all look after our families. Thanks,
absolutely,
guys.
Thanks, Terry. Appreciate you.
Thanks, man.
The legendary Terry Crisp, brought to you each and every week by Highland Group at this time. When we come back, Gary Bettman had some comments about a possible schedule on when the NHL could return to action. We'll get into that next. This is Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. That was NHL Commissioner Gary Bettman on Get Up on ESPN talking about potentially resuming the season and the timeline in which that may take place. Back here on Morning Drive, Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexroad here on a Friday morning on ESPN 102.5 The Game. And Joe, you heard some comments there, and we've talked this week about maybe potentially the idea of extending the playoffs this season to August and into September. Gary Bettman doesn't seem to be entertaining that idea at all, because he doesn't want to impact having a full and normal season next year. So with that information, what do you think is the latest the NHL could go before they truly get into impacting next season? Because free agency typically starts on July 1st. You've got the draft right before that. You can probably move those dates around a little bit if you have to. Let's say if the Stanley Cup needs to be awarded in early July, you could probably move the draft and free agency back at that point without having a drastic impact on what happens next year in the season. But I do wonder, like, at what point, if you get into, you know, mid-August, late August, and all of a sudden you have an off season of like 2 weeks and you have training camp firing up in September. Is that going to be something that's acceptable to the league?
Well, like Terry Crisp said last segment, at some point you got to say, okay, by now we've got to make a call.
Yeah.
You know, now you don't have to do it right now, but at some point Gary Bettman has to do that. I will say that you tell me, Robbie, I think I would rather have a playoff and a Stanley Cup champion and cut into next year than not have anything. I mean, I understand, like, you'd rather not mess with next year in the calendar, but, man, I would much rather, if I have to mess with the beginning of an interminable 82-game regular season, I would do that to have a champion and to have a playoff. The problem that I have is just, like, you don't want to mess with football.
I mean,
that's the whole thing for all this stuff that gets pushed back. If you're getting into September with stuff, that's not going to go well.
No, certainly not from a ratings perspective. I agree, Joe. I mean, if you're telling me you can't come back until maybe July and the playoffs wouldn't finish until early September, I'd be okay with that. And I understand there's a lot of bending over backwards you would have to do to move around drafts and free agency and all these different things. I mean, you have to move the start date of next season back until probably November at that point. I'm okay with that. You can do. I mean, there are two options you have once you do that. You can either cut down on the games and take away 82 games and maybe play like 65 games or 70 games, something like that, or you can just play 82 games in a very condensed schedule at that point. I think either one would be an option, but I agree, Joe. I think having the playoffs, determining a Stanley Cup champion is important. I mean, I think there have been two times in the history of the league where there's been no Stanley Cup champion, 1919 and I think 2005.
And the lockout of 05, right.
So I think it's important to do that. Now, to your point, regardless, even if that's the way you want to approach it, even with that approach, going and potentially being willing to go to August or September, there's still a date where you've got to realize, hey, if we're not back and resuming playing by this point, you probably just need to pull the plug. Like, so let's say, for instance, you're targeting under that format coming back sometime in July and the playoffs ending in September. You know, if we're, you know, a week or two into June and we're still no resolution on this front in terms of the coronavirus, which we don't know, there could be, there may not be. At that point, you probably have to determine, yeah, it's probably not going to be feasible to finish this season. Like, at some point, Gary Bettman and the NHL, they're going to have a date in mind of when to pull the plug.
An interesting thing he said there is, you know, he talked about the, you know, maintaining the integrity of, you know, the pursuing and awarding, earning the Stanley Cup.
Yeah.
So that, to me, says he's not going to be into, like, a gimmicky one-off kind of thing, you know, to get this done. You know, I think, and look, I think of all the playoffs, I mean, look, we've had great Game 7s in baseball and great Game 7s in basketball, but to me, like, the Game 7 of a Stanley Cup playoff series is
awesome.
Special, is different. So, like, I would, like, early rounds, I think you might have to think about doing some different things, but once you get to, like, conference and Stanley Cup finals, like, I want 7-game series.
Yeah.
Like, I just, like, I can't, you know, it just, it's already going to be messed up and weird and different because of all this, but there should be Game 7, and, you know, the possibility of a Game 7 overtime, and it's just, that's what I thought of when I heard him say the integrity of the, you know, of the playoff, or of whatever they're going to do here.
Yeah, like, look, you're going to have to, regardless of what decision they come to at this point, you're going to have to think outside of the box in some way. Like, you're probably not going to be able to finish the regular season. That's a foregone conclusion at this point. But in terms of the playoffs, like, how do you determine who's in the playoffs? Do you just go by the standings of when play ended? Do you go by points percentage? Like, there's some decisions you have to make from an NHL standpoint at that point. But also, like, do you go a 5-game series in the first round, a 3-game series in the first round, a 5-game series in the second round, and then get into 7-game series in the conference final and cup final? Like, those are things that, quite frankly, if you have to go 3 games in the first round, 5 games in the second round, I'm okay with it. But I agree with you. Once you get to the conference finals, I want to see 7-game series.
Now, there are people that are going to say, no, No, no. It's got to be seven games, and or it's not, you know. But look, there's just a lot of stuff that just it's not going to be the way you want it. I mean, do you want a playoff or not? The amazing thing about all this, Robbie, is we're trying to figure out what it might look like, and does it stretch into May? Does it stretch into June, into July? It's been a week. It's been a week of our lives totally changing here. It feels like so much longer, which frankly doesn't have me too excited about the next few weeks. But it's been a week, and so we are just now in this country starting to test people. And we're finally starting to get tests going, and we're going to actually have data, you know, unlike when we weren't testing people and some idiots wanted to talk about how there was no one with the coronavirus because no one was getting tested. But anyway, the picture is really just starting to come into focus a little bit. And so it can change so much even in a couple weeks. I mean, I know people are like, oh, there's no way football season is not going to be impacted. I think you have to keep your mind open for that. But also, I don't think you can be resigned to that right now. There's just so much that can change in the next few weeks.
Yeah, and look, I think we all are just kind of waiting and seeing. And by all of us, I put the leagues themselves in this conversation as well. Like the NBA, they have no idea when they're going to be able to return because they still have players – almost on a daily basis, testing positive for this thing. Like, I mean, it's something that as they continue to test more teams and test more players, it came out yesterday. Like, two members of the Lakers have tested positive for coronavirus. And we don't know the names yet, but, like, I mean, as that continues to happen, it's impossible to come back at that point. So we're all in wait-and-see mode, and I still go back to what we've talked about a few times. I think the NBA is going to have to be the first one to come back, and I think the NHL – we'll follow suit after that. But I just think from a standpoint of the sports landscape right now, I would expect that the NBA will be the one to kind of lead the charge in returning to action.
Yeah, you're probably right. I mean, it's in a lot of ways, it sort of leads and the other leagues follow. So, yeah, the NBA is, and we talked about this yesterday, but some people upset because, of course, you know, full teams, I guess eight teams have been tested, even though just – to test them, even without symptoms and things like that. But, you know, this is where, I mean, it's just how it's going to be. I mean, professional athletes and actors and wealthy people are going to get tested, whether they should be or not. And regular people are going to have to, you know, kind of see how they're doing and figure out if they need to go get a test. I mean, that's just how it should be done. I'm not saying that's how it should be done, but that's just how it is. That is life. So, but I agree with you. I think the NBA is going to be probably the trendsetter once we go on the other side of this too.
So, real quickly, let's operate under the theory of the NHL that they don't want to affect next season in any way. They want to have training camp start normally in the first part of September, preseason, and then you start the regular season in the first part of October. When is the last? I don't want to give like an exact date, but right around the exact time where if you're the NHL, you just have to pull the plug on this year. My guess is
– like ending date?
Yeah, ending date. My guess is probably the first part of maybe middle July. Like that's the latest it can go at that point, I think.
Like I'm personally willing to go later.
I am too.
I mean, and I understand now if you do this, then your whole offseason and everything gets impacted. But again – I mean, look, there's sort of a forced off season happening right now. You have to look at it that way if you want to. I mean, there's a lot at stake here for all these sports leagues. So, I mean, the mindset of players should be like right now is part of your off season. So take advantage of it. Yeah. Not get out of shape. But I would go into August with it. And I think sports fans would be more than happy to watch Stanley Cup playoff hockey in August over preseason football.
When we come back, Belmont senior forward Tyler Scanlon will join us. Joe Rexroth had a very interesting piece on The Athletic that Tyler Scanlon was included in. We'll talk to him about that and the whirlwind that has been this last week and a half, 2 weeks for him and the Belmont basketball program. That's next. This is Morning Drive, live from the Wholesale Link studio, powered by RumbleOn.com, here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Game night's fun until someone spends 5 minutes lining up one shot. Chalk, breathe, re-chalk, still aiming. While they figure it out, I fire up Chumba Casino. I can spin anywhere, anytime, and there's always a new social casino game every week. Spins happen way faster than that shot. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba. Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.